I'm Arun Venugopal, in for Tanzina Vega today. Good to be with you. In early June, near the start of this summer's racial justice uprising, California Governor Gavin Newsom told demonstrators that their voices were being heard.
We have a responsibility to change. Our institutions need to change. Our capacity of understanding needs to change. We need to contextualize not only this moment, but moments in the past where we never met these calls and these cries, that we ran short. We ran long on rhetoric, short on results.
This week, California reached the end of its legislative session, and while several criminal justice bills were passed, a number of more progressive measures ultimately fell short. To get a better sense of what this round of criminal justice legislation means for the Golden State, I spoke with Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent at KQED News and co-host of the podcast Political Breakdown.
Broadly, this is an attempt to institute more oversight of police and make sure that there is sort of a public accounting when things do go wrong. One of them, the main one I would say, is AB 1506. This is something that an assemblyman from Sacramento has been trying to pass for at least 5 years. And it essentially would say that in the case of a deadly police shooting, that investigation would be taken from the agency where it happened and given either to the state attorney general or possibly to a new state agency if the attorney general doesn't want it. And the big catch here is they would need to fund that before it can go into effect. So there's some questions. There's another bill that's going to let local counties create oversight commissions for sheriffs who, you know, are elected and don't really have the same kind of oversight that we see at a lot of city police departments. And finally, they did ban chokeholds. So that was obviously a big point of contention after the George Floyd killing. And I think those were sort of That one was not as controversial as some of the other ones that did not make it through this year.
So let's talk about what you refer to as essentially the centerpiece of this raft of legislation, AB 1506. What kind of opposition were you seeing from law enforcement and their allies in recent weeks?
Well, I mean, this is something that, interestingly, I think behind the scenes, we've seen lobbying for many years around this issue and concern, particularly from unions. I mean, this is one of those interesting ones, right, where we have seen historically sometimes a split between chiefs and rank and file. But I do think that this is more of a question of prosecutors, right? And so the big split here has actually been between the question of local control. Should a local district attorney be able to, can they do an impartial and fair investigation, or does that need to be taken up to the state level where they might not have the same kind of connections and, you know, quite frankly, working relationship? I think a big question here is whether local prosecutors are kind of beholden to the police department in a way that the attorney general wouldn't. But we've also seen the last two attorney generals, Kamala Harris, now the Democratic vice presidential nominee, and Javier Becerra, who's a pretty progressive Democrat, has sued the Trump administration 100 times. They both, as attorney general, pushed back on this, saying they didn't have the resources to do these types of investigations. And so I think that that's why we ended up with this piece saying, hey, you have to fund this. And really, I think there's a longer runway in terms of when this could actually take effect because of those concerns from prosecutors. Arun, I just did some deep dives into Kamala Harris's record, and I found out that, interestingly, one of the reasons she really pushed back was that when she was first district attorney, folks threatened to take a murder case of a police officer. So a gang member had shot a police officer. She had run saying she wouldn't seek the death penalty. She did not. That angered a lot of cops. They went to the state attorney general and said, hey, take this case away. And so when she was then attorney general 8 years later, she was like, no, I don't want to be taking away this power from local elected DAs. So unlike some of the policing stuff, I think a lot of the conversation has been around the prosecutor role more even than the police department itself.
Now that these bills have been passed, what actually happens next?
Well, they are sitting on Governor Gavin Newsom's desk. You know, he did kind of come out broadly in support of sort of broad brushstrokes on police reform and then some specifics. We know, for example, that he had said that the chokehold ban should be instituted. So I would be surprised if he vetoed any of these bills, but, you know, never say never.
So you have some level of uncertainty in terms of implementing some of these measures. It's unclear right now, isn't it, the extent to which they'll actually, I guess, go forward.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, this shows really the sort of sustained power of law enforcement, even in this moment of this racial uprising, and really, I think, widespread support for some of these oversight measures. You know, the police unions, the sheriff's unions, the correctional officers unions in California have historically been very powerful and had really, especially in the 90s and early 2000s, funded a lot of the tough on crime measures. I don't think they hold the same power they did 20 years ago, but there are certainly a lot of more moderate Democrats in the state legislature who don't want to kind of cross them. And I think, I mean, the other interesting thing I always think about is, for example, a sheriff is a countywide elected official. A DA is a countywide elected official. A police chief, you know, represents an entire city, essentially. Those elected officials get more votes, have more constituents than a state assembly person, right? So they do kind of come with a kind of power, I think, when they come to lobby for or against things that we don't see from all local officials.
And what else should we know that didn't make it through?
Well, there's another bill that kind of was aiming to build on a previous measure that really opened up police misconduct records at the beginning of the year and has resulted in, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of cases being opened up by folks like my colleagues at KQED and really finding some horrific evidence of misconduct. And one of the things that we found in this after this first bill passed was that a lot of police officers can get fired and then go on to be hired elsewhere. And so that plays into that certification issue I was talking about. But the one of the state senators had wanted to essentially open up that open records reform even further and said it's not just certain serious incidents like sexual misconduct or a deadly shooting. They wanted any sustained instance of use of force by an officer or any instance where an officer is found to have lied to be a public record. And that one also did not make it through this year.
Now, there are some ballot measures that are going to be up before voters in November concerning criminal justice. Can you tell us what some of those measures entail?
Yeah, this is really interesting, Arun, because these are ballot measures that were put on before George Floyd's death and before a lot of these protests this summer. One of them is essentially it's a referendum on a bill that was passed 2 years ago by the legislature and signed by then Governor Jerry Brown to essentially end cash bail in California. This was put on by the bail industry. They are asking voters to reject that law. And so that's going to be a pretty big fight, one I know folks in New York are familiar with because you guys have had these debates as well sure. as across the country, really. The other is a kind of grab bag that is being put on by a former police officer who is actually a Democratic, but a pretty moderate Democratic state assemblyman, some district attorneys and other law enforcement. And it seeks to roll back a kind of series of reforms that have been instituted through different laws over the past 10 years. Some of those were written by former Governor Jerry Brown. He just yesterday told me he's putting $1 million into trying to defeat that measure. And advocates think that essentially in broad brushstrokes, what that measure would do is make it harder for many inmates to parole from state prison and really easier in a lot of cases for prosecutors to send more people to jails and prisons. Critics of this proposal say that it would really roll back a lot of the progress California's made around lowering its prison population and focusing on rehabilitation and reentry over incarceration and kind of really harsh prison sentences. And so you really do see an interesting coalition of folks coming out against this. In some ways, an interesting coalition pushing it because it's not just a partisan issue, as I mentioned.
Yeah, and let's hear what ex-Governor Jerry Brown had to say to you yesterday.
The only reason that some police unions have decided to fight it and some of the DAs, they either are part of an enterprise that depends for its growth on more people being locked up, or they have this ideology that there can be no redemption, no improvement, that once a man commits one act or three or four acts, that is his whole essence forever. And everything we know about human beings is that they can change. Maybe not everybody, but certainly a good number of people.
So given these measures that we're seeing come out of the California legislature, do you see Black Lives Matter activists and their allies doubling down, or are they kind of taking a break and trying to sort of reassess the landscape here?
I think activists are kind of scattered in a way. I mean, I think that there's a lot of folks who have spent a lot of energy trying to push the legislature to do things. It's a slightly different coalition who is most involved at this point in fighting Prop 20 and the bail ballot measure. But I'm sort of interested to see how things play out over the next 60 days or so, because I do think that we've seen public opinion really shifting wildly this summer around Black Lives Matter and the protest. And it's really hard to tell kind of how everything happening nationally is going to impact these ballot measures. You know, we know that people, if they are confused or not sure, they tend to say no to things. But both sides in that Prop 20 debate, for example, claim that their polling shows them ahead. So who knows? And I think there's just and there's always the wild card, right, of this presidential race and the protest and kind of where things move, whether it be here or in other states.
Marisa Lagos is a politics correspondent at KQED News and co-host of the podcast Political Breakdown. Thanks so much, Marisa.
My pleasure.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.